we're trying Parsha, at least for sake of gracious, and then we'll see what happens. So, like I said, you know, when we finished with Daniel, there are so many different ways that you can learn Parsha. I wasn't sure whether to try something that would be more of an overview, something that's on a particular issue, something that's even on a particular pasuk. And so for this week, I defaulted to Medrash. And I would like to know more about like what it is that people are hoping to get out of a Parsha Shir. So let's see what this does. I didn't ask people to bring a chumash. In retrospect, maybe I should have. But we'll be fine without it. And I'll refer to the psukim. I'll tell you the psukim that that we encounter. This medrash is on the opening pasuk of the parsha, but it gives us much greater insight than just okay, here's the opening pasuk. It gives us, I think, some important ideas for Noach's entire ark, ARC. As that was intended, and Noah, and also for the way we approach figures in Tanakh and people in general. There's a lot here. If you take a look on your sheet at number one, the beginning of the beginning of the parsha. Ela toldos Noach, Noach ish tzadik, right? This rings a bell, hopefully. Right? These are the toladot of Noach. Toladot means
descendants.
Products. That which one produced. Usually it does refer to one's children. That's usually what toladot are from Laholid. But really, toladot, when we talk about toldos Noach, is that which he produced. And I emphasize that because the rest of the pasuk, when you think about it, it says, these are the toladot of Noach. Noach ish tzadik. He was righteous. Tamim haya bedorosa. He was without defect in his generation. It doesn't tell us about his kids. Right? Eselokim esalach Noach. And then afterwards, Vayola Noach shlosha banim. By the way, he has these three boys, and Shem, Cham, and Yafes, and so on. So that Noach's toladot, Noach's product, so to speak, is actually his righteousness. But even before we get to the righteousness of Noach, we have to start with Ela toldos Noach, Noach. And that's what the Medrash does. Medrash is not hung up on the trough, the way that a pasuk is laid. It's not hung up on the translation so that you have to break up a pasuk in certain ways. Medrash feels free to capitalize on lessons in a pasuk that don't necessarily emerge from a grammatical reading of the pasuk. And that's what's going to happen here. The opening pasuk is read by the Medrash as Ela toldos Noach, Noach. These are the products of Noach, Noach.
And it's changing the grammar.
Changing the grammar, changing the pasuk. And we'll see why. And we have to understand why the Medrash does this. But that's where our Medrash is going to go. If you look at number one, Ela toldos Noach, Noach. Which again, if you were to read it in context, would be Ela toldos Noach, comma, these are the products of Noach, Noach ish tzadik, Noach was righteous. But we're stopping after the second word Noach. So Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana says, Komisha nichbal shmo. When you find someone in the Torah whose name is doubled, because it says Noach, Noach, Yesh lo ba'olam hazeh, v'yesh lo ba'olam haba. That means this person has a share in this world and a share in the next world. In other words, they are good and God is going to reward them. That's what it's trying to tell me. At least that's stage one of this Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah. However, the Medrash records a challenge. Asibun lei. They asked a question against this. Vaksiv terach terach. You also have, at the end of Parshas Noach, Ela toldos terach. These are the products of terach. Terach holides avram ve'es lot, etc. The pasuk says, these are the products of terach, terach. Well, does that mean that terach was a good guy? Normally, how do we view terach?
Bad guy.
Well, he's an idolater, right? Avram has to go break his idols, right? Terach is generally understood not to be a role model. So it says Terach twice. Im ken yesh lo chilek ba'olam hazeh lo'olam haba. Does that mean that Terach has a share in this world and the next, because his name shows up twice. So Amalei Afi Lo Tavri, he says, oh, that doesn't bother me. That doesn't break the idea. Why? Da Amar Rabbi Yudin B'Shem Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, because Rabbi Yudin quotes Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana to say, Terach Din Tshuva. Terach becomes a good guy in the end. Quotes you the Pasuk. Abraham is told, Ve'ata tavoa lavosecha b'shalom, you will come to your ancestors in peace. That tells him that he's going to rejoin his ancestors. In other words, I might have thought Abram's the first, whatever you want to call him, monotheist perhaps, the first to speak to God with a Jewish message, and therefore Abram shouldn't rejoin his ancestors when he's buried. Abram is... he's the only one. Maybe he goes to Adam, to Shem, something like that. So Hashem is informing him, no, actually, your father gets a share in the next world as well. And not only that, last line in the Medrash, Tikaver b'seva tova, you'll be buried at a good age. Bisro she'ishma'elo, said Tshuva. He told Abraham that Yishmael is going to do Tshuva also. You will have a good old age because even Yishmael is going to come back. Now, this is a fascinating medrash for many reasons, but there are three problems that I want us to make sure to address when we look at this medrash. What bothers you about this medrash? Things should bother you here.
So, the Jews did the name Yishmael.
Right. Tshuva. Well, apparently he does do tshuva, because otherwise the Medrash can't say it. The question is, what evidence do we have that he does tshuva? And indeed, the Gemara asks the question about naming people for Yishmael, and their answer is, yeah, Yishmael did tshuva. Don't worry about it.
Did he do it in the desert? It's documented that he did it.
So one possibility is that it's when he calls out to Hashem. Right, when he cries out, when he's when he and Hagar are out there in the wilderness, maybe at that point he does tshuva. We'll see. I want to come back to Yishmael's tshuva, but I think you have to ask a more fundamental question.
Well, that Terach doesn't seem to have a tshuva anymore.
But how do we know that Terach does tshuva, or is this the evidence that Terach did tshuva? But more to the point, why are we dragging in Terach and Yishmael here? Right. Who cares? This is a medrash about Noach. Why? This isn't their movie.
They always do that.
Right. So maybe it's just here because we're challenging this approach to Noah, and therefore, and that's one possibility. I think there's a deeper point here, but I think that's certainly a basic.
Their personalities, like they're not like they're multifaceted. He has the negative and positive.
Right.
Both people were
not tzaddikim first, and then tshuva.
Correct, and by associating that with Noah, we're trying to say Noah also is a multifaceted person. It's Terach, it's Yishmael, and even Noah. You should know Noah, and we know because you know the story. Noah is not simple and straightforward. Whether you talk about from the beginning the question of why doesn't he go out to try to convince people, right? The Torah doesn't give us any record of any conversation with Abraham. We're told that he calls out in the name of God. We get no such reference regarding Noah from the beginning, and then of course the whole story after the flood, where he gets drunk, and you look at it and say, well, who exactly is this person, and how am I supposed to take this person? And this medrash is affirming that by putting the three of these figures together. So I think that's one point that we have to look at. Another point that we have to look at is this is not the only approach to doubled names, meaning we find other midrashim that give more conventional explanations for why a name will be doubled in Chumash. Leave aside the fact that his name really isn't doubled. Right? Again, the grammatical reading of the Pasuk is these are the products of Noach. Noah was a righteous person, and so on. The name is the doubling is not redundant. But take a look at the second source here, which is on a more clear example of it. This medrash is on the Akedah, when Hashem calls out to Abraham and says, you know, don't kill Yitzchak. So it says Abraham, Abraham, and there it really is doubled for nothing. So Tani Rabbi Chia says on that, Lashon Chiba, Lashon Ziruz. Either it's doubled as an expression of affection, Hashem is saying, oh, Abraham is so wonderful, and he calls his name twice. Or alternatively, it's Ziruz, which I translated as urging. Like, Abraham, Abraham, pay attention, you know, don't kill Yitzchak. And Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov gives another view. in which he says that it's actually prophetic. It's a statement about the future. There's an Avraham now, and there's going to be an Avraham in the future. And this Medrash goes through four figures who have their names doubled like this, where Hashem speaks to them and says their name twice. He says, Ein dor she'ein bo ke'Avraham. There is no generation that lacks an Avraham. Ve'ein dor she'ein bo ke'Yaakov. There is no generation which lacks a Yaakov. And Moshe and Shmuel. If there's time at the end, I'll go back to this point, because what it's actually saying in terms of this Avraham, Yaakov, Moshe, and Shmuel, that's a very important message in its own right. It's just one that I think I need to leave for after we deal with Noach. So remind me at the end if there's time, and I'll come back to that message. Yeah. So why is Noah not there, and why did our Medrash that we started with not take that approach? It's a nice approach, no? I mean, all three of the approaches in that Medrash, that is affection, that is zeros, that he's trying to urge him to do something, or that it's a statement about the future, it's some kind of a nevuah. Why isn't that?
Because it's not quotes. It's not like they're calling out to Noah. It's written there.
Good. So one of the key things we need to recognize is, and we'll build on this, but right off the bat, you see, the pasuk that we're commenting on in Noah is the narrator, right? It's God speaking to the reader and saying, these are the generations of Noah. Whereas in all of the other psukim that we're talking about here, Avraham, Yaakov, Moshe, and so on, Hashem speaks to the person and says, Yaakov, Yaakov, or Shmuel, or Moshe, and so on. So therefore, it's a different sort of a message. It doesn't make sense to say that Hashem is projecting love for Noah by saying his name twice. Noah never heard this pasuk. Right? It doesn't fit. Ditto for urging. He's not urging Noah to do anything. He's not talking to Noah. So that's an important distinction to draw. And then the other question that I have to ask is, you're telling me that the pasuk says Noah's name twice in order to inform me, the reader, that Noah has a share in this world and a share in the next world. Would it have been conceivable for me to read the Chumash and think Noah doesn't get into Olam Haba? Right? I mean, he's only the sole righteous person on the planet. Right? I mean, really? Noah? Why would I need this?
Well, the story at the end, right?
So hold on to that thought as well. So now let's look closer at this. First, we've already recognized that this Medrash is capitalizing on a pasuk, which is not a message to Noah, it's a message to us. The reader is supposed to know this. Why does it matter that I know this? You know, it's sort of like the Mishnah in the beginning of what is now the last parak in Sanhedrin, where it says everybody makes it into Olam Haba, except the following people don't make it into Olam Haba. Then it goes on to name who doesn't make it in. And you sort of read that and say, well, why is it any of my business who makes it in and who doesn't make it in? What is the message for me in all of this?
Can I ask a question what you said before?
Sure.
You said, why do we have to know this because of the end of the story, but it says right afterwards, Ishtadim. So why do we really have to know the end of Olam Haba? I assume that that's...
Yeah, well, that's what I'm asking now.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's going to say Ish Tzadik. And, you know, generally speaking, if you're good enough that the Torah says you're Ish Tzadik, you know, no one's going to second guess that.
But it's also saying that he's just an Ish Tzadik, the Dorosa. Like, maybe, compared to the rest of the people, he was a Tzadik.
Right.
But had he been in someone else's generation, they wouldn't have considered him such... So righteous.
Right, and that's the classic Medrash. It's a debate between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, as I recall, in the Gemara, about how to take Tmim Hayavidorosav. Is he without defect in his generation, meaning compared to them? And in that case, maybe he's not so wonderful. If he's in Moshe's day, Abraham's day, he's not so wonderful. Or do we say, no, despite the generation in which he lived, he still managed to be Tamim? And those are the two views, and maybe we'll get a chance to discuss that a little bit later. But take a look at source number three. Yeah. Sorry. Source number three is really important because it builds on a medrash that I would wager most of you have heard before, but takes it in an entirely different direction. You're familiar with the first Rashi in Chumash? Rashi in the beginning quotes Rabbi Yitzchak, right? And they tell you in day school that he might have been quoting his father, right? You've heard that one?
Yeah.
Right? It's not true, you know. It's a Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah from Rabbi Yitzchak. With due respect to Rashi's father, he wasn't a Tana in Bereishis Rabbah. That would have been quite a feat by a thousand years. So, no, Rashi is quoting a Medrash from Rabbi Yitzchak. The Medrash that he quotes says, why did the Torah begin with Bereishis? Where should the Torah have begun, according to this Medrash? Achodesh Zavachem. The first mitzvah in Parashas Bo, why does the Torah give me all this background? And Rabbi Yitzchak says, because of the pasuk in Tehillim, Koach Ma'asav Higili Amo, Laseis Lehem Nachalas Goyim, which literally translated goes something along the lines of, he, Hashem, told his nation about the might, the strength of his deeds, to give them the portion of the nations. Right? In other words, Hashem told us that this is how I created the world, and this is what I did, and that's what led to the creation of the Jewish people, and they're receiving land in Canaan, which then becomes Israel. Right? That's the beginning. So here, people who read that opening Rashi often make a mistake, which is that they think that the whole Rashi is in the Medrash, but it's not. The Medrash stops there. And then Rashi makes a comment. His comment is, lest the nations of the world say, you're thieves, you stole the land. The answer is no. I created it, and I gave it to the people I wanted to have receive it. I gave it to Canaan in the beginning, and then I took it away from them, and gave it to the children of Abraham and Sarah. Right? That's what Rashi says. Lest anybody say, we're thieves. No, look, it's in the Chumash. That's Rashi. Right? The opening Rashi. What's the problem with that Rashi?
If
we're going to play that game, then presumably there can be a Christian version of Rashi who's going to say that, lest the Jews say, well, you're the real nation and not us, let them open up our New Testament, and it says that God now appointed a new one and so forth, right? Why? And the Muslims can do the same thing, right? That doesn't really work that way. But what Rashi is doing is he's building from the Medrash and extending it with an idea that's not what's in the core Medrash. Rashi's problem is the same problem as the Medrash. Why did the Torah begin with creation? And his answer is because it explains for us, really, why it's okay that we get the land of Canaan. However, Ramban takes the same Medrash and says that's not actually the lesson of the Medrash. And that's source number 3. He quotes the same Medrash. V'nasin Rabbi Yitzchak tam lazeh. Rabbi Yitzchak explained why the Torah began this way. Ki tchila Torah bebereishis bara Elokim v'sibur kol inyan hayitzira abrias Adam. That the Torah began with in the beginning and so forth, and the whole story of creation. V'shem shilo b'maseh yadav. V'chol shas tachas raglav. That God gave man control of his creations, put everything beneath his feet. V'gan Eden shumivchar makamos hanivraim ba'olam hazeh naseh machon l'shivto. That Gan Eden, the garden, the choicest of all places, becomes the place where we are going to live. Ad shegirish oso cheto misham, until our sin caused us to be exiled out. V'anshei d'ramabel b'chetam gurshu min ha'olam kulo, and the people of the flood, when they sinned, were chased out of the world. V'atzadik b'hem l'bado nimlatu u'banav, only the righteous fled or escaped. V'zaram chetam garam lam lachitzam b'mekamos v'lizrosam ba'aratzos, and then their sins caused the descendants to be scattered from place to place, and so on. What is Ramban doing with that opening midrash? What is Ramban trying to say? He's taking the same midrash about why the Torah began with creation, but giving a different lesson.
It's like it's an intro to the next few parashios that are coming. Like, Hashem created the world, and so He's in charge. So then that explains the chait and the Gan Eden, the Eitz Hadas, and then Hashem sent them out. And then the Zohar Plaga, Hashem
sent
them out.
Sounds like exactly the opposite.
And
he gives him total control.
Yeah, exactly. Because he created the world, he's in charge of where you get to live and who doesn't.
I feel like he created the world, and it's like, okay, now it's your choice. And we see the repetition of sin after sin, and not really fixing their ways or not learning or whatever it is. But
right. And what's the point of starting the Torah there? What is the goal? You're right. But what's the
figure out?
Maybe.
Well, the reason Hashem created the world was like this is good. So if this is like he's showing that even though he's doing all this, but he gave it to the hands of man, and they're just
okay. I think these are all true, but I think there's another point building on what you're saying. You know, when I was in graduate school, one of the things that one of the projects I worked on that was in computers was machine learning. And at the time we were working on either speech understanding speech or parsing a picture of a machine. So a picture, could it figure out what was in the picture? Could it learn to read? Could it learn to understand graphics and so forth? And they've come a long way since then. But one of the things that you had to do was that you would give the computer an algorithm, the formula by which it would start to read and start to interpret the data it was being given, but the machine would need time to actually make mistakes and figure out how to apply it and fine-tune what it was doing. You need a calibration period where it just absorbs a lot of data, tries out the formula, and either gets it right or gets it wrong. You know, it's like human beings, right? When you're first learning to walk, and when you're first learning to read, and you're first learning to speak. So you'll do it the wrong way a bunch of times, and eventually you'll get it right. And what Ramban is saying here is that that's actually the point that the Medrash is trying to say. This pasuk in Tehillim is trying to say that Hashem informed us why he gave us the land, not in order to say, and here, plant your flag, it's yours, but in order to say, now you understand what I approve of and what I disapprove of. By reading Bereishis and everything up to Parshas Bo, you understand what God likes and what God does not like. So, for example, people are taking advantage of others and using their strength against others. Hashem wipes them out. Right? Abraham, on the other hand, goes to battle on behalf of Lot. That's a good thing. Hashem approves of that.
Why doesn't he include those on the list?
Why doesn't Ramban?
Like very negative,
right, I think because he's drawing on that pasuk, which really focuses on Hashem giving us the land of Israel and taking out those who had been there, which is the Ramban's immediate focus. But if you look at the full text in Ramban, I think he actually does go beyond this. But that's the idea, which others have taken as well. The Nitziv writes about this as well, that Bereishis is also called Sefer Hayashar, the Book of the Righteous, because it's meant to be our basis for learning righteousness. You want to know what Hashem wants? Open Sefer Bereishis. You want to know what Hashem doesn't want? Open Sefer Bereishis. So we get early on, obviously, you know, Adam and Chav eating from the fruit, that's one. Cain and Hevel, another one. Lemech and Ada and Zila, another one. Migdal Bavel, another one. And so on. We get all the negatives, the don't do's. And through Avram and Sarah and Yitzchak and Rivka and so on in the family, hopefully we pick up some positives as well. All of that is meant to bring us back to the question of why I need to know that Noah makes it into the next world. This is part of the calibration. I'm supposed to learn from this that Noah is a role model. This is the one we do like, because after the flood is over, we don't really know what happens. I mean, we know the immediate drunkenness, but we don't know what happens to him afterwards. He doesn't get land somewhere. He doesn't have a happy ending that we are familiar with. And so therefore the Medrash says, no, it's trying to tell me he's actually still viewed as a tzaddik, and despite what happens with the drunkenness, he's still going to be viewed that way. We're still going to view him in a positive light. You follow?
So is that trying to teach us like the lesson of like the scale, sort of like that, you know, his merits outweigh his sins, or
I think yes. And I think he's trying to teach us that he's a complex human being. You know, one of the things that people do all the time with the figures in Chumash and Tanakh as a whole is that they try to psychoanalyze them and, you know, sort of put them into a package and say, okay, now we understand this one. You get somebody who lived, in Noah's case, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years, but even somebody who lives, you know, what we would consider a normal human lifespan, and you know four things that happened in their life, and suddenly, you know, now I know them very well. They're like my next-door neighbor. Yeah, you have to recognize that people are more complex than that. And certainly when it comes to the, you know, the business of him becoming drunk after the flood, I mean, if anyone's ever had a right before, you know, in human history, to drown their sorrows, so to speak, it would be Noah. But without, you know, without trying to ascribe motive to that, because we don't have enough information to really know what happened and why he did it. The bottom line is, and I think this is what the Medrash wants us to know, is you wouldn't necessarily know he's righteous from the story because you have the questions of did he or did he not reach out to others? What is this Bidoro sub thing and what happens at the end with his drunkenness? And therefore the Medrash wants to inform us he is righteous. He remains, in our books, a candidate for Olam Haba. And Terach and Yishmael are similar. They're people who we don't know enough about to judge, and in fact, they're going to end up in Olam Haba also. You follow? Mm-hmm. So that's on a very straightforward, you know, just sort of, this is what the Medrash is trying to do level. But I wanted to take a little bit of time on Terach and Yishmael, because there are some interesting points to be drawn here. First of all, it's interesting that Avram doesn't know about Terach's tshuva. Right? Hashem has to say to him, that pasuk in which Hashem speaks to Avraham and says that, you know, you're going to go back to your ancestors, Terach's already gone by then. Avram and Terach haven't seen each other. Right? You know about the chronology at the end of Noah with when Terach died? Okay. There's a major problem in Parshas Lech Lecha, which, you know, when you learn it as a kid, your teachers, if they know it, don't bother to point it out because it's just going to give you a headache. But you sort of have to know. How old is Avraham when he... I should have asked you to have a chumash because then you could have seen it inside. How old is Avraham when he comes into Eretz Canaan?
90, my dad. Mm-hmm.
Younger.
75.
Avraham is 75. How old is Avraham when Terach dies? That you can do the math on at the end of Noah. Yeah. He's older than 70. Yeah. Avram's 100 and what? When Terach dies?
Well, so it goes ahead. It goes ahead and then it goes back.
He was 70 when
that's
he
okay.
He lived to 205. So Avram was 100.
Means that Terach is alive for a long time after Avraham actually goes into Canaan.
Well, that's what it says. Yeah, that's only Beit Aviva.
But it says Vayamas Terach B'Charon before that.
65 years.
I'm sorry.
Avram lived
here. Yeah.
Terach was 205 years old.
So the pasuk says Terach died in Charon, right? And Hashem told Avraham, go to the land. But actually, Avraham goes to the land while Terach is still alive. So Medrash suggests perhaps that it conceals it a little bit. Because it's not so nice that Avraham left his father.
That's what Hashem told him to do.
Yeah. Right, which that's the answer. Hashem told him to do it. But rather than say that explicitly, so we'll just sort of, you know, paper it over a little bit. It's also not crazy when you think about the fact that really the next story has nothing to do with Terach. Yeah. Right? The next story has nothing to do with Terach. So we're wrapping up Terach's story in the same way when Yishmael disappears from the picture in Chumash. We get his whole lineage. Right, of people who haven't been born at that stage, but nonetheless, we're sort of wrapping up Yishmael here, and so we'll give you his lineage, and then the same thing happens to Esav also, when Esav sort of exits stage left. So fine, here are Esav's generations and all of his future leaders, and now we're done with Esav, and now we move on with the story of Yosef and his brothers. So it's not crazy to say the Torah is just putting paid to Terach by saying this, but there's something else there that you have to catch. Where does Avraham start his journey when Avraham goes to Israel?
Haran.
Does he?
Because it says Terach took them all to Haran, and then
But that's a problem because Avraham grew up in Ur Kasdim, not in Haran.
Right. So Terach took them right before he says and then Noah.
Why did he do that?
Why did Terach take them to Haran?
It's even worse, because Hashem says to him, Lech lecha me'artzecha mi'moladtecha mi'beis avicha. Leave your land, leave the place where you were born. He's not in the place he was born. He's in Haran. Haran's not the place he was born.
You're born again.
Ah. So, in part, this may play into the whole medrash about Abraham and being thrown into the furnace by Nimrod, right? Which those of us who are here for Daniel now see added resonance to, because it's Daniel's story, really, showing up with Abraham. But the idea of it as built into that medrash is that they had to get out of Dodge, meaning they were in Ur-Kasdim. Abram got into trouble with Nimrod. He got thrown into the furnace, and Terah said, you know, maybe it's best for us to move. And so he moves to Haran. But then the question is, when did Hashem tell Abraham that they should leave Ur-Kasdim and that they should go? The bottom line is that this is a little bit of a mess, this chronology. But the point that I wanted to make out of all of this, and aside from the question of why did they leave Ur-Kasdim, go to Haran, and then leave Haran and go to Canaan, is that Abraham leaves Terach, and they're apart for decades. And at some point, after Abraham has already left, Terach does tshuva. Right? That's what the Medrash is trying to tell us. I think that's a remarkable thing, that Terach does tshuva on his own, and Abraham never finds out about it. The only way Abraham knows is because Hashem says to Abraham, after Terach is gone, Hashem says to Abraham, you'll be buried at a ripe old age and you'll go back to your ancestors because your father, you should know, also did tshuva. I find that to be very interesting, that, you know, just the idea of it, that Terach would have abandoned idolatry, adopted the vision of his son, and never told him.
It doesn't say father, he has ancestors. Doesn't he have other righteous ancestors? Why is that really a proof that he did tshuva?
Right. So, it's not. This is the Medrash's take of that pasuk. If I wanted to read this pasuk without Medrash, and I was bothered by the question of, well, which ancestors is he joining, I probably would have assumed it meant Noach and Shem. Right? That's probably what I would have assumed. Although it couldn't mean Shem, because Shem is still alive at this point. So it has to be Noach, well, maybe Adam.
It's not unheard of that parents are inspired by their children.
No, it's not. But it's funny that he wouldn't have told him.
Well, they didn't
really. I mean, the mail wasn't.
They didn't have email.
Right, the Wi-Fi was down.
He took his leave your father, like, cut all ties to your father. Like,
right.
If he left his father, that's it. Like, don't look back.
Right, but Terah wouldn't reach out to him.
He didn't find it.
Threw him in the dogs. He gave him the Nimrod to throw in the fire in the first place.
But I don't think he was a willing participant in that. We don't know anything about the story.
Why
the story we don't know about.
Well, he went and told Nimrod, my son broke all the idols. No? Isn't he the one?
Is that the way he finds out? Is it? Let's go back to the Medrash.
He actually told Nimrod.
Right, Haran dies in that story, right. So that's one piece that I thought is worth thinking about, just the dynamic of Terah and Abraham. Second is that Hashem would have told Abraham, as this Medrash says, about Yishmael doing tshuva. That pasuk, I gave you the reference, is Bereishis 15:15, right? How old is Yishmael at the time that Hashem tells Abraham that? No. Bereishis 15. Well, those who have a chumash can look. No, it shouldn't. It really shouldn't. When is Yishmael born? In what parsha is Yishmael born? Sorry. Yishmael is born in Parshas Lech Lecha. It's true. This story about Yishmael, about Yishmael is going to do tshuva and all that. If I remember correctly, I didn't check it before coming, but I don't know that Yishmael's been born yet. When he is told v'atatavol avasecha b'shalom tikaver b'seva tova.
Yes, he's not born yet. That's beautiful. He's born after that.
He's born after that. Yeah.
And a good age implies that your son.
That your old age will be good because, don't worry, Yishmael does tshuva. But Yishmael hasn't been born yet.
So that's
he hasn't been named.
Saving him.
Yeah, but that's just a brief atonement that he told him that, right?
Sorry?
Like, when he told him that, wasn't that when he did the whole read of the book?
Yeah.
So he's just predicting the future, I think. You know, even though he wasn't born, he could have the midrash saying that it is him at that point.
Well, what the Medrash is saying is that Hashem informs Abraham before Yishmael is even born that your kids are going to be good at the end. No matter what happens, don't worry about it. He's going to be good. But what I like about what the Medrash is doing is that it solves a different problem for us. Fast forward from this time. Yishmael is born. Yishmael grows up. He's now 16 years old, roughly 16, 17 years old. And Sarah comes to Avram and says, kick Yishmael out of the house. Right? He's not worthy of being raised with, and more important, inheriting with Yitzhak. Medrash builds up as well that he is a threat to Yitzhak. And Avram says, no, he has to stay in the house. Right? Until Hashem says, no, listen to Sarah. But on what basis does Abraham insist that he has to stay? So you could look at it without knowing this Medrash and say that it's because Abraham is a person of chesed and he believes that everybody can come back and he's reaching out always to people, so he wants Yishmael to come back also. And that's a reasonable read.
So it's his son. It's not Sarah's son, so it's understandable that she would fight him on that.
Right, and that's fair.
Do you believe that it could be to Zerah at that point or no?
So Abraham had already been told he wasn't. In the end of Parshas Lech Lecha, Hashem says to him that it's going to be, you're going to have another child, a child from Sarah. And Abraham says, Lu Yishmael Yechiel Lefanecha. And Abraham says, I just wish Yishmael would be good before you. That's what Abraham says to Hashem. But I think this Medrash gives us another layer. What you're saying is true. It could just be, it's his kid and so forth. He already knows the ending. He says, I know Yishmael's going to be good. Let him stay. And Hashem says, I know what's going on.
Why is Zeva Tova? Why does that mean?
Because a good old age is being defined here as your children all following in your ways. There's a lot to be said for that.
Right, but that could be like open to interpretation.
Yes. I agree.
Did Hagar convert, or was she Jewish at that point?
Oh, that's a really good question.
There are no Jews then.
Yeah, that doesn't really...
No. Being Jewish doesn't... Right, the word Jewish isn't really the key. The question is...
Yitzhak went to
Gosher.
I wouldn't get caught up in... Right. So you're familiar with the Medrash that Keturah is Hagar, right? Abraham, we know, after Yitzchak is safely married off, Abraham, we find, takes another wife. Her name is Keturah, and they have a bunch of children who are sent away off to the east with presents, and they become wanderers of the Midbar. That's for the Shoftim Shir this afternoon. We're going to talk about that because one of the kids is Midian. But the question is, if Hagar is Keturah, then we're saying yes. She did some sort of, tshuva isn't really the right word, she's Egyptian. But the idea is that she is righteous, and the name Keturah is meant to reflect that. Hagar is this wandering Egyptian. Keturah is someone who is sweet smelling like incense. And so it suggests that she becomes great. And I think the basic reason for making that association is because why in the world would Abraham have married her otherwise? Why would Abraham marry... we know why he married Hagar. Sarah told him to. And Hashem said, that's what you do. We don't know why he would have married, some random person. We assume it's a wife of Abraham. There has to be something there, some kind of connection. Keturah could be Hagar made right, so to speak. And it's a distinct possibility. It also fits in the sense that her descendants go off to the east. When you're living in Eretz Canaan, what is east? What is east? So it's the Midbar off to the east. It's the Midbar area, and that makes sense. That's why Midian ends up where they end up, right next to Moab. They're across the Yarden, and that's where you find them. And that's where Yishmael is also. So it makes sense to think that Hagar's later children would have ended up in that same area with her earlier child. There's more to say about Hagar and Keturah. But the answer is that yes, it's possible that that she makes good in the end. But my point in highlighting Yishmael is just that Abraham may know, according to this Medrash, she does know from the very beginning that Yishmael is going to go right. So now we have to ask the question of where does Yishmael go right? When does he do tshuva? So one answer is source number 5, the Medrash that that we already noted earlier, that suggests that Yishmael does his tshuva when he cries out, when they're in the midbar, when he's out there with Hagar and he's starving, and you know, you read the story on Rosh Hashanah, the Kriyas HaTorah for the first day of Rosh Hashanah. The striking piece in this medrash is when the Malachim say, you know what his kids, what Yishmael's kids are going to do to your kids, are going to do to the Jewish people. And Hashem's answer to them is, well, what is he right now? Right? And the answer is, as the Medrash says, he is tzaddik. And yes, it's playing off of Bashir Husham when Hashem says, I've heard the voice of the child as he is there, meaning not based on what's going to be in the future. But the striking thing about it is he got kicked out of the house. Right? If you would ask me what Bashir Husham is for Yishmael, he's rotten. And especially if I take the Midrashim about what he's been doing, you know, threatening the life of Yitzhak, involving Gili Arayos, Shrichos Damim, all these different terrible things, how in the world can you tell me he's righteous right now? And the answer must be, at this moment in time, he has done tshuva. And that's one possible source that he repented. A second possible source that he repented is found at the Akedah.
Was he really doing tshuva and just crying out of desperation? They're in the desert. They're starving. They have no sustenance. I mean, Avram gave them
only
some water.
Yeah.
Sorry?
I feel like Hashem must know if it's sincere.
No, but I think that's true. But I think that's what the Medrash is trying to highlight for us, that even that can be considered real.
Even a moment of...
Yeah. I mean, it's a Gemara in Kiddushin, in which the Gemara talks about a fellow who, I guess, has a very high opinion of the woman he wants to marry, and he says to her to marry him on condition that he is tzaddik. And the Gemara says there that even if he's been rotten his whole life, the Kiddushin are valid. We assume that he had a thought of tshuva, assuming, you know, she accepted, which... That's her choice. But assuming that she accepted this condition that he gave, he's viewed as being righteous by that moment of having desired to do tshuva. You know, don't make fun of it because we all take advantage of that on Yom Kippur. That's the idea, that a person's moment of aspiring to greatness can really mean something. So that's one possibility. But a second possible identification of Yishmael as someone who has done tshuva and even come home is source number 6, which, recognizing that we're a little short on time with, I'll paraphrase it, but you can see it there. We know that Avram goes to the Akedah with Yitzchak, but he also has Shneina Aravimo. He has two youths with him. The problem is we have no idea who Avram's two youths are going to be. We've never met any youths of Avram, right? So one of them is Eliezer, we suggest. And even though Eliezer is not a young man, nonetheless, and he's described in the Chumash as Zikan Beso, the old man of his house, nonetheless, he's energetic, so we'll call him a youth. Okay, that's one. Who's the other is the problem. So the suggestion is, it's Yishmael. But wait, Yishmael got kicked out.
And he's older.
Older than...
Then Yitzhak was already 30.
Yeah, he's not young either.
Right. Assuming Yitzhak is 37, then that makes Yishmael 50. That's correct. So also, you know, look, I'd like to be called a Nar when I'm 50. That won't be so bad. The Medrash here in source number 6 in fact assumes that it's Yishmael and Eliezer, which means that Yishmael came home. And that's really what I wanted to show you here, is that Yishmael returned. The Medrash has no problem with the idea that Yishmael actually came back. So that's a second piece of it. And then the third and the most famous one is the Gemara in Bava Basra in source number 7, where they note that when they bury Abraham, it says, Vayikberu Oso, Yitzchak v'Yishmael Banav. Yitzchak and Yishmael do the burial, and the Chumash even lists Yitzchak first, suggesting that Yishmael honored Yitzchak by putting him first. There are other ways you could read that order, but that's what the Medrash here in Bava Basra, the Gemara in Bava Basra, is picking up on. So we have sources that suggest that Yishmael actually did tshuva. So what I wanted to show you from this, and there's a lot more to say, and you can see there's a second piece of the Medrash in source number 8 that we didn't even get to. But what we're meant to see here is, sure, is Eleth Holdos Noach. Noach, these are the generations, these are the products of Noach. Noach is used by the Medrash as an opportunity to say that Hashem Hashem invoked his name twice to teach that he's great in this world and he's great in the next world as well. And that even though there are these questions that we have about Noah, about reaching out to others, about the intoxication after the Mabul and so on, recognize that people are complex and that he is held up to us as a role model. In this Sefer Bereishis, which is a book, as Ramban notes, of role models, he's a role model. And despite the questions that we have, and not only that, we see it with Terach, and we even see it with Yishmael. Last point, just because I realized I didn't say this explicitly, and I should have. We asked the question in the beginning, well, the word Noach isn't really doubled. These are the products of Noach, comma, Noach was, and so on. What was the alternative? What could the Pasuk have said? Sorry.
Huhaya.
Exactly. It didn't need to use the word Noach twice. You know, if there's anything that frustrates people when they're reading Chumash, it's the fact that Chumash loves pronouns. It very often will say, he did this, or she did that. Well, more often he. But anyway, it'll say that, and you don't know what the antecedent is. Who is the one who is acting? Who is the one who is speaking? And here, of all places, where it could have just said, Eila told us Noach, hu haya ish tzadik, or something along those lines, Eila told us Noach ish tzadik even, these are the products of Noach the righteous, it doesn't do that. It said the name twice, and that's what the Medrash is picking up on, the fact that you didn't default to a pronoun. And that's really what Medrash is all about. It's that kind of a listening ear to pick up on something like, you used the name, you didn't use a pronoun, what were you trying to get across, and then build on that.
But then how should we read the rest of the passage? Start the next sort of phrase with the words Ish Tzadik?
Nope. Read it the way you read it. In other words, Ela told us Noach Ish Tzadik, and I'm just picking up on the fact that it didn't say he was Ish Tzadik, but it said Noach was Ish Tzadik, and I'm saying, oh, you used his name a second time, you're trying to teach me and so on. Yes, that's what this medrash is doing. All right, there's a lot more to be said, but I think that'll suffice for now. But that was sort of, if we were doing medrash each week, like that's the sort of approach that I would be doing with a medrash here. Next week I'll probably try something a little different for Lech Lecha, and a little bit of a different approach. But you know, let me know. I'm going to send out the follow-up email later, God willing. Let me know sort of what you're looking for in a parsha shir, because there really are so many different ways that you can approach it. And maybe I'll send out a homework question also for Lech Lecha. We'll see. All right. Thank you.